Hello, and welcome to another edition of PoshidaCast. I'm your host, Craig, and I'm joined by Jack and Grandmaster Al.
How do I do?
Yes, hello. Hello and welcome.
So thanks a lot for joining us, Al, today. It's great to have you on. And we're keen to kind of ask you a few questions about Bushido, but we were just thinking maybe just to start with, we could ask you about your kind of hobby career and what got you into wargaming.
apologies. My career in hobby gaming really began, as with most people's, with Games Workshop, 40k, Fantasy, and then the sort of various skirmish iterations that have come through that system. I then moved on to War Machine. I was playing that at quite a high level for a number of years, and then I moved across into Guild Ball, and I was doing a bit of the playtesting for that, as well as playing again relatively high level at that. And when that concluded, I moved across to Bushido, which I'd played previously, and that's kind of where we are at present in brief.
Great. And is that kind of your main game right now, or do you dabble in quite a few?
I paint for a few systems, but predominantly in terms of gaming, Bushido's the one I'm playing just now. I play a lot of board games and stuff as well.
Nice. So you've been quite successful at that.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's quite safe to say that you've got to be one of the most prolific players in Bushido at the moment, because I don't think there's many people that have won two Grandmasters events back to back. And I think if we actually break down the games, you've played 8 Grandmaster games, won 7 of them 3-0. And I had the unfortunate fate of playing you twice at both events. But yeah, I think a 3-0 win for most people is, I wouldn't say it's difficult, but it's still a big feat. And to win 7 out of 8 Grandmaster games 3-0 is quite a massive and quite a great achievement, really.
That's tryhards for you, though. I mean,
so I think it's just worth mentioning for society, we're probably going to divide a few people in the community, because I think there is a bit of a split between people. You know, you get some of the quite competitive players, which I kind of think I probably lean more towards, and I think it's safe to say you do as well, Al. And there's quite a lot of lore-based players, which is absolutely fantastic. I think the system needs both. But yeah, I think with the introduction of, you know, with the growing community, and there does seem to be a lot of competitive players, I thought it'd be quite good to, you know, we'd all have a chat about what you sort of do when it comes down to a Grandmasters event, and what, you know, what you think about. It'd be just good to sort of pick your brains about how you go about writing your lists, and how you test them and things like that, really.
Mm, yeah. And certainly try and give it a shot. Dissect it a bit.
Cool. So, like, hypothetically then, so say, I know Jason releases a date for another Grandmasters event, sort of where do you start? You know, is it, do you normally, you know, what's your thought process behind your list that you've been building?
I suppose it depends on, first of the thing, yeah, I'll probably be playing through the factions that I've got just now. So my main factions are Minamoto, Ryu, Ito, and Ascension. Then I've picked up the Inari and stuff, which I'll play about with. And I'll generally play with, I'll basically move back and forth between those lists and see which one I was kind of, what's taking my fancy at the time, what the kind of new releases are, or what new combinations I'm enjoying. And then it's really like, well, I have to narrow down the faction, which is obviously not an issue for a lot of people. Maybe they've got one or two factions, maybe they've just got the one, but generally I've got to go through that kind of process of seeing which faction I'm going to play. And that's the starting point. I don't know if you guys are the same or not, or whether you tend to...
No, it's definitely a challenge I've had as well, because I play quite a lot of different factions. So I can get stuck at that stage in the process. So that's kind of why I took an approach of just kind of like picking a theme last time round and just kind of working within that constraint. So I've kind of started off with a very limited playing field for working on the list. But yeah, I think some people are more disciplined to just collect one faction, so they should know inside out.
So, I mean, then once you've chosen your faction, I think you have to kind of settle into, right, how are you going to play them? So if you've got quite a wide faction like Ryu, you've got a few options. You've got the themes. You've got your samurai theme. You've got your predominantly Ashigara theme. And then you've got, obviously, a mix. And then, like, my hideous Agani list actually started off as Blood of the Dragon. And it was only later, and I was like, oh, it's quite difficult to achieve what I want to achieve with only six models. And it was only like, okay, how much of a downside is it coming out of theme and using like the other, like widening the list? And at that point it's like, oh, actually this is just as effective, this is more effective, and never change this here. And at that point you're saying, right, okay, I suppose it's something you've kind of alluded to previously. Like, if you're going to focus around one specific model or a couple of specific models, is the main benefit you're taking away, is it going to come from the theme, or is it going to come from the sporting models and the faction itself? If that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's the way that I've started to look at lists, you know, since obviously the way that you focused on one model, a lot of the experimental lists that I've been playing around with at the moment have been focused on sort of one, maybe two distraction pieces, big heavy hitters that are going to cause you problems. Mm-hmm. And then I look at like the supporting pieces with that. So like the Minamoto list I took to the last event, it was Grey Pilgrim and Karu, you know, they're going to cause you issues. Mm-hmm. So you've got to focus on them. But whilst you're focused on that, my six other Ashigaru and Fire Kami that are quite cheap and not very, you know, people won't think them as great players or models, can then do other bits. So, yeah, it's mm-hmm. definitely an interesting side of things. And it's good to hear that, you know, it works for yourself. And, yeah, I lost my train of thought there. We'll have to edit that out, but...
I guess it's interesting to see that you started with a kind of a faction theme, and then kind of found you could only kind of evolve that so far. And then looking at the Ronin themes, things like Orders for Battle, kind of gives you that flexibility to innovate further and get kind of things, you know, refined to exactly how you would like. Mm-hmm. And I suppose it's the flexibility at the start of the game as well. Do you value that a lot from the theme benefit, or is it kind of just more about the actual list creation that you've got in mind?
I mean, ultimately, I found I haven't needed to use the Order for Battles swapping elements out a huge amount. I think if you're going into Order for Battle, that's a benefit, but generally, if you're going into Order for Battle, it's to make maximum flexibility of the either Ronin or the breadth of a particular faction. And Ryu's really good for that, because obviously, being one of the oldest one, it has one of the oldest factions. It has some of the largest model range, so it gives you the most options, has a few Ronin that it can call on. Obviously, if you were to go with one of the kind of minor factions, something like the Anari or even ninjas, where you're more limited by the number of models you have, it's generally more beneficial to keep to a theme because the breadth isn't there in the first place.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because, I mean, certainly Yanari, it's been designed as a themed set, and it gets quite a lot beyond just a theme benefit. It gets like all the special cards and access to a couple of models mm-hmm. and things like that. So it kind of does lead you down that path. Mm-hmm. And but no, it's interesting what you say there. I mean, certainly I can relate to that in the sense of when I play Savage Wave, I quite like putting the Oni and the back mono together. Mm-hmm. And it's not often I'm building like a machine, and I don't Order for Battle allows me to field it. And it, in theory, allows me to adjust it. I haven't been as successful as you have with this, but it's a similar principle in the sense of, well, actually, at the start of every game, I kind of look at all my options and go, well, I don't want to mess my machine up. Mm-hmm. So I kind of, it's nice that I could do stuff, but often I'm like, yeah, do I really want to? Because if I take something off that side, then it kind of, you know, it unbalances things. So it's one of those ones where, I think there's kind of like, you know, two good use cases, at least for Battle, in the sense of either giving you the maximum flexibility when building a list, or that kind of pre-game flexibility, and I'm sure there's cases in between. But it's interesting because I think most people tend to talk about the kind of the adjusting part ahead of the game, because in my mind anyway, and why I hear a lot from some of my local players, is that they feel Bushido is a game that's it's got some hard counters in.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes the game very interesting and kind of competitive in some ways, but actually also can mean that you can, if you're on the wrong side of that, then it can be quite tough.
You get flattened.
Yeah. So I think it's a kind of a bit of a, it feels like a bit easier and safer for them to take that, I should say, probably safer, because they can learn, they feel like they got some say in it, they can adjust it.
Makes sense.
So I think kind of depends what level perhaps you're playing at and kind of what you're looking to get from it, but it does seem like to me at least there's at least two good use cases for that theme. Mm-hmm.
So if we were to, it's an interesting, it depends what you're wanting to do with your list as well. So just now I'm kind of exploring a Ashigaru list for the Protectorate of Ryu, and it's kind of, I'm teetering about with 9 or 10 models, and the idea is you've got nothing there that's like individually like world ending. There's no there's no Haganis, there's no massive, you know, snake behemoths or anything like that. There's nothing that's gonna be a world ender by itself, but I'm just wondering, right, well, if you can get a lot of positional strength out of it, you can start really far up the board, you've got a lot of kind of movement options, and also you've got a significant like weight of bodies, and I'm wondering whether that is going, and whether it's going to be particularly successful, I haven't really got around to yet, but that in itself, so that's an example for me, is something where you can say, right, well, it's probably more beneficial to stick to Claws of the Dragon, for instance, that particular theme list, because you're already playing into a particular strength. So yeah, you may as well take the theme at that point, because it's only increasing the strength of the theme or the playstyle you're already like creating for.
Yeah, it's not putting any constraint on you. It's just added good stuff that you can have for free.
You mentioned you're playing around with that at the moment. So do you give yourself like not a set period of time? It's obviously with work and life, you know, you can never say, right, I'm going to put this side of time to test my list. But, you know, do you, in your mind, is there sort of a comfortable period, you know, as soon as, say, a Grandmaster's announced, is that right? Are you straight into that mode of looking at your list and fine tweaking it? Do you have many sort of stress test games as such, or?
Trying to ask if you've done a Jack where like 48 hours before you decided I'll play Jung that I've never played before.
have I done that?
Which worked for Jack.
I've tweaked things and had like one game with them before like they've hit the table. So did they get stress tested? Yes, but will it be the final list that actually reaches the master's tables? Not necessarily. There'll be elements of it that'll be like, I know this is good, I enjoy this model, this one does work, I'm gonna throw this on, it seems to work, hopefully it will. So if that answers the question, it will be stress tested to a point, but it depends, like you're saying, like work-life balance and all that jazz. Something might come to your mind, you go, oh, or someone might point out a model, that list might benefit from model X, All right, yeah, I never thought about that before. Let's try that one. And maybe you get 3 games in, maybe you get 5 games in, maybe you don't get any games in, and you just, you know, go for it.
And do you sort of prepare for certain factions, or do you just try and make your list as broad to cover everything? Because obviously we've got quite a few factions now, quite a few themes, quite a few different elements, and there's no way you could have a perfectly tailored list to, that can meet, you know, if I play ninjas, I've got this. If I play Ryu, I've got this. You know, some of the games are always going to be that sort of uphill battle. So is there sort of a set in your mind, right, I want to focus on that if I come up with these guys, I've got something that I can do? Or...
Yes and no. Like, if there are particular factions go, oh, this list struggles into, let's say, cult, then I would give more thought to what, how to counter that, right? If this if this enemy model shows up, is there anything we can do about it? Are there positional plays that we can make to mitigate certain things? But obviously there's a huge breadth of list. There's things you maybe not have considered before, or there might be something that's very much out of left field, and you're just like, oh well, we'll just have to, you know, roll with it, sort of thing. So my list will sometimes be tailored off of what my friends are playing at the time. I go, all right, okay, that was quite strong. That was quite difficult to deal with. We need to have an answer to that. But often because they're approaching from quite a competitive standpoint, they've got quite strong lists, and it's right, okay, well, I know that I need to watch out for that, or an equivalent of that in, say, another faction. Like, right, so Hagani can fly across the table, but so can Big Sharks and things. And one model might not be an exact copy or be as effective at anything of like an assassination as an assassination piece, or as a tank piece, or a support piece. But you still have to know, in my mind, in my perspective, you have to know what you're going after and what you have to protect. That's kind of how I approach the game. Like, you have to have at least have a base knowledge of what you're playing with and what you're playing into if you want to kind of do well ultimately. That's not to say, like, obviously you can't enjoy yourself, but if you want to try and like get to the top tables, I suppose you have to know what things, how things are going to interact with you, or suspect how they might interact with you. If that makes sense.
No, that's interesting. I guess we've actually, it feels like there's quite a lot of new releases lately, and all these new kind of themed lists coming out. Do you think that makes kind of the meta more difficult to kind of keep up with, or is it just kind of making it a more interesting playing field when you're trying to sort of work out? Because like you said, some of these things, a beta's a beta at the end of the day. So arguably, kind of, you know, there are some commonalities, but also they're quite different, actually, some of these themed lists. So like, how are you going to counter them and approach them could be, could be quite a big challenge. I think, for example, the Yuta or Yurei, I think they've caught a few people off to start with at the very least, because they do things so very differently, and they kind of need a certain approach to counter. Otherwise they do seem really quite an upward battle. So things like that. Do you kind of think it through like that? So what's your take?
I quite like the theme boxes and stuff. I haven't had a chance to play with an Ares Judgment. I have played against the witches and their skeletons, and I know exactly what you mean, like fighting that many durable regenerating models can be like quite oppressive if you're not sure how to handle it. But I suppose, unlike in Ares Judgment, the witches and their skeletons can be developed into more sort of standard cult lists, and at that point you can also kind of look back and say, right, well, do we want to remain in like V3 as a theme, or are we going to get even stronger with the breadth of all the Cult of Yuri's like models and support and other kind of assassin pieces or control pieces? And that's just like a question to kind of ask yourself, if as that as the controlling player, I suppose. And Irish Judgment obviously is a bit of a different beast, given that it's kind of a limited range, but I'm not that well suited to speak on them yet, because I haven't really got around to playing them yet.
Yeah. Okay. Have you faced into Tanaka?
No, not a huge amount. No.
No. Yeah.
I've played against them once. I played against the Wolves once, in one of the tournaments, but I'm not that well acquainted with them.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough. I think we've spoke about Shiho a few times, and it seems to be still a kind of a faction people are again used to as well. But no, that's interesting. So I guess in your mind, when you're looking at your list, do you kind of tick off the things that you think, you know, the scenarios and the list that you will need to overcome, or do you just kind of sort of see what shows up at the tournament, because you just never know?
I would never presume that any particular scenario is going to come up. I just kind of try and gain your general kind of thoughts about general positioning in terms of your terrain use, any additional terrain that you might buy, Rice Bill Barricade, hint, hint. And those would be my general concepts, and how terrain changes games. Because how you put terrain down against three musket list of protectorate is very different against how you might deploy against ninjas or Bakemono, or even something that has a number of large models, and how you could maybe funnel them so you don't have to fight them all simultaneously. I think trying to play out for a particular scenario is, because there's quite a lot of them, it's a bit difficult, but learning how to place terrain effectively is a massive.
Yeah, I think that card in our first game, you took the biggest blocking piece there was and just stuck it right on the very side of the board, so it couldn't affect anything. I was like, oh yeah, there's all my cover gone, or out of use. So yeah, I agree. Terrain is one of those things I think people tend to overlook and chuck on the table, as if, oh yeah, that'll go there, that'll go there, that'll go there. But don't actually really think about, actually, you know, if there's only this amount of space between terrain pieces, if I put that bit there, like you said, you create those funnels, which is really important, to sort of pick your battles effectively, as opposed to just going blind, I suppose, or trying to take more than you can afford to take on. So,
it's a massive feature, especially if you're playing something that has a lot of Pathfinder, or you have a lot of ranged elements. Because if you put down terrain features that are not going to provide, they're going to. So, say your opponent has no Pathfinder and you have a lot of ranged elements, you should be looking to put down, because most of your fighting happens in the midboard, you should be looking to put down maybe elements that are clear, like difficult terrain pieces that aren't going to provide them cover, so you can maximize your ranged advantage while slowing them down, and vice versa. If you're playing something like Dissension, you're wanting things that are going to block the enemy, slow them down, that you can move over in a much more free-flowing fashion, and not be limited by. So, like, ultimately, a lot of the models, you're paying a rice cost for a feature, like Lightfooted, like Cloudwalk, so you may as well use the train, because that's as part of the game, and you're doing yourself a disservice by not learning how best to utilize that, I feel.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think that's a pretty unique. Well, if I haven't seen it in any other game other than Bushido, where you sort of have to deploy the train as part of the game. And I know it's not necessarily going to be used in every game, but it seems to be a fairly common format for tournaments, which when I was new to the game and I saw the kind of the rules in the back of the book, I was really interested to see if people would use it competitively or whether it would be the usual kind of you just turn up and realize there's a pyramid in the middle of the table or something random like that and you just have to fight around it. But I'm really pleased to see that actually it is a it seems to be part of the competitive game, because to your point, actually you can really change the outcome of a game very early on through clever placement of terrain. And I've seen some people kind of do some very interesting things, kind of, you know, they know I've got a lot of flankers, so they're, you know, they're prepared for it. You certainly know who's played against a flanking heavy force by the way they kind of start setting up the scenery, and a lot of kind of counter deployment and all sorts of interesting things to your point around, like, you know, maximizing life footing and stuff like that. So probably as you said, you're a dissension player. I tend to find anyone who's played dissension kind of gets good at deploying terrain fairly quickly.
Out of necessity.
you're paying so much for it. It's really interesting that you highlight that as kind of being such a key part of the competitive scene, because I mean you could easily write plenty of good lists that you think are amazing, and then you realize like there's lots of difficult training, all your guys can never get there or whatever, and or your free musket list, maybe it wins all your local games because there's no kind of real scenery to hide behind or something like that. So it's certainly good to hear that that is an important part of your game. Do you tend to buy a lot of scenery with your warbands, or do you just kind of rely on what's there? I think thinking back, can't remember if you're Rice Belt Barricade player.
Certainly I respect the Rice Belt Barricade. I will utilize train pieces. Again, it depends on the faction, doesn't it? There are certain terrain elements that you would never go without if you're playing back a mono. There's two pieces that I think most people would generally invest in before they've even concluded their list. A lot of people like to use Rice Belt. And again, it depends on the faction. There are some terrain elements that are just not left. They're never left behind. And some factions you can get away fine without anything. Or they don't have anything to call upon, really. So it depends on what you're playing into routinely, or if you're playing into certain factions, you might find that something like a Rice Belt Barricade is much more impactful than, say, you're playing against. If you have a Rice Belt Barricade into Dissension or Bakemono, and even against Bakemono, it can almost be a double-edged sword. If you're playing into Dissension, they're just flying over it a lot of the time. Though you can still utilize it in other ways. However, if you play into someone like Minamoto or, like, say, We Three Meet Again, where the models are either slow or can't generate key to destroy it in the first place, that can be absolutely devastating for. Yeah. So you can never win a fight against the skeletons. The skeletons can't even are having real difficulty maneuvering around the board, and suddenly that's changed what was going to be an incredibly difficult game into something else entirely. So again, it depends. You have to know the faction or have an idea, right? If I'm playing into Dissension, I can't block them physically, but maybe I can stop a zone. So again, it's knowing your opponent and how they might try and get around it, or how well suited they are to getting around a certain terrain element.
So I've seen the ice patch from the Minamoto player put in front of my three witches, and suddenly that 3-inch lane movement. It takes them quite a while to get past. Yeah.
I was just...
So and Sun Goddess Shrine as well. I think I've seen that in your sideboard. That's kind of like a nice kind of anti D&D insurance kind of policy. Just in case it needs to come
100%,
out.
Yeah. Because ultimately you might go, well, I just can't defeat something like that. I can't defeat that many zombies, or I can't defeat that many skeletons because I don't have combo attack, or I don't have the weight of models required to bring them down. So we have to get more inventive. sometimes that's cool. The way to do it.
So would you say it's quite, because I think you touched on the fact there's quite a lot of scenarios and a lot of different, a lot of different scenarios, and and within the scenarios they're all different as well, with objective zones, and they can all be played slightly different. Would you say that you look at sort of like the attrition battle really is your focus to sort of reduce your opponent's models count so you can then worry about the scenario as such, or would you say you go into the mindset of attacking the scenario sort of from the offset?
Again, it really depends on the faction you're playing, because so someone like, I think in my experience, someone like Minamoto don't often have cheap or maneuverable cheap models or access to things like Vanguard or anything like that, something that can deploy up the table. So a lot of the time they have to just push through the enemy, and they can't afford to stop. So at that point, a lot of the time you're concentrating on just leveling the opponent, actually just try and kill as many of their models as possible, because you don't have that many models to play scenario objectives with. If you're playing with a Ryu Ashigaru list who can start half their models up the table, 6 inches up the table, and you've got 10 models to play with, you're going to approach that in a very different fashion, because you're going to have some models to block. You're going to have a wealth of models, hopefully, to block, but you're also going to have positional advantage because you're already effectively a runner more up the table, and you could be turning the objectives before the opponent can be even begin to approach them. At that point, you're asking yourself, what are the scoring conditions here? Can I hold on? If, for instance, you're playing a 10 model list that's just all trash and your scoring turns are 4, 5, and 6, there's a good chance you're going to get obliterated before you've concluded the game. However, if you're playing with that 10 model list, you're halfway up the board and your scoring turns are 2, 4, and 6, you might say, right, well, I know I can get the turn 2 score and I'm looking to get the turn 4 score. And if I can manage the turn 6, then so be it. But obviously, you'll be maybe concentrating on those first two. So it really depends. You have to think about how and when you're going to approach these things. And the list composition. How does it play? Are you going for heavy control elements that are just going to stop the enemy? Are you flanking in mass? So it depends on each of the lists. And it's difficult to give a concise answer without saying, what would you do with, Ito? What might you do with Minamoto? Because each of these plays quite differently and approaches each of
the scenarios. Would you say you've got, this is sort of going slightly off on a tangent, would you say you've got a fairly competitive Ito list that you would look to play? Because I think you seem to have started the trend of, I think, Minamoto at the point where you won a Grandmasters with them hadn't won a Grandmasters event. Ryu hadn't won a Grandmasters event. And I think Minamoto, Ito are probably one of the only factions left now that haven't won a Grandmasters event.
So I have been toying with that concept, if I'm honest. That's pure hubris, but yeah, I have wondered about it. I do have, I've played about a few things. I tried a Serpent's Coil list that failed absolutely horribly. My Samurai couldn't pass fear tests on, fours and stuff like that. That was quite embarrassing. That was a whitewash, got slaughtered. I do have a Blessed list that I quite enjoy, which is quite versatile. But again, it has a good mix of support models. It's got maybe like 33% support models, some middling fighters, and then some like decent kind of samurai heavy man, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And it's a much more well-rounded force than, say, the Protectorate list that I played with last time. and it's a lot less brute force than, say, the Minamoto list from the first Masters. It has like control elements through like hypnotic gaze. It's still got obviously all the inherent speed that Ito comes with, and there's a lot of poison in it being a part of the Blessed list. So again, it just depends on. But it's, and also it's got quite a lot of levels. I think it's an 8, 7.
It's definitely one of those things that I've noticed since. So. It's really hard. I'm in a really hard place at the moment with in terms of lists, because I've gone from playing just literally elite 3, 4, well, not three, not competitively three, but for fun, I was playing 3 ninja list models. But, you know, competitively like 4 ninja list models to randomly taking 9. And after taking that 9 models, it's just really opened my eyes to like how important activations are. Even if they're just, you know, just if you've got another model that can just strip an activation of somebody, it's just very, it can be, you know, it can feel quite negative from, you know, the receiving end of it, but it's a very important and very big part of the game. So I'm actually quite concerned going back to playing ninjas now, how I'm going to approach them. but yeah, it's really important. Would you say that activation becoming sort of, would you say they're the most important element to your lists, or is that just a sidetrack? Obviously, you've mentioned, you know, obviously your Hagane list was like 8 models, isn't it? I think, or 8 or 9. Yeah. And you've mentioned a couple of your lists. You've touched on what you've been trying to sort of 8, 9, 10 models. You know, is that a theme that you think is just because it is so strong to deal with, or?
It's not. I mean, it can. I mean, it lost to a cult list the other day. So it's not like having the most models is inherently going to win you a game. It definitely won't. But there is definitely an advantage if you can have a couple of monkeys charge a 25 race samurai, and they both die. It doesn't matter. Like, you've literally, there's only in some, a lot of games, there's maybe only 10 activations effectively for a lot of models. And if you've stripped 2 of those, with what is effectively 2 or 4 rice, and they haven't been able to move up the board, then you're winning, even if they have died. You know, if they survive somehow, then all the better. So it depends, it's how you use your activations. And obviously, if you're positioning poorly and your fodder models get charged by a Nico who wipes them both out with combo attack, then it doesn't matter that you had 4 activations; you've still just lost them all simultaneously. So again, it depends how you use and whether those. Models and their activations, how they're getting utilized ultimately, because it's great when you get your, you know, your 5-point model and it holds up an 18 race model, but you have to also remember that it's probably only going to get you a turn or two, so you will be losing that ultimately, those activations, and that should be cognizant. You should be cognizant of that as you play forward. You should be like, oh, I do have 18 activations, but by turn 4 I'm not. How many activations am I realistically going to have at that stage? And do you have elements to remove other people's activations?
That's why I find Beck Mono quite strong, because they defy the logic, because they keep summoning back.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what kind of that normal kind of attrition is what keeps like the animal kind of list down a bit, because you know, they can strip your activations, but you will kill them normally. Like, you know, one, two rice gun models tend to go away quite quickly. Back mono sort of interesting. Any game that starts dabbling with summoning is very interesting, I find. And I think they've got the balance about right, but I haven't played with the new Hornblower yet. It's been a while since I've summoned more than one per turn. But it'd be interesting to see how that kind of balances out. Because certainly it's been one of the factions I thought was fairly strong in the past, though I haven't seen I haven't seen too much on the tournament scene. Yeah, I've seen a few lists, but haven't seen them sort of perhaps do quite as well as I thought. But it might just be kind of a matter of time for, you know, we see that, you know, come out. But yeah, do you fear the Backmono, or do you think
there are elements of Backmono? I am quite surprised that I haven't seen a huge amount of Backmono, or pure Backmono, on the tournament scene, because I think of between Oni and Backmono, Backmono are notably better, in terms of being able to shift around the board, saturate the board with models. I am very interested to see how tuning changes the Backmono playstyle. I'm very interested. Yeah. I think Backmono are pretty strong, and they have elements that are very, very competitive. And I've surprised. I don't know if it's a lack of, I don't know why they've been less popular than I might have thought, but I imagine you probably will see more of them with tuning and things coming forward, because I think they are very good.
Yeah. I was theorizing this that it might well just be because Bashir is still a relatively kind of small scene, and we've only got so many events, even though we've had a lot more recently. But I was thinking it might also just be the time constraint. I don't know whether that is something that you ever factor in, or whether you're, because I think you've got to be pretty confident in your speed of play, and kind of can you get through that number of models. And I think to that point, that's why I think the most I've used was about 8 models or something. But I think that's one thing that certainly would go through my mind. Haven't gone to a few of these events, I think it's completely manageable to finish your games in time, but it's also completely possible to
it's a fair point. And I suppose it depends. Can you get yourself comfortable playing with 9 models by turn 2 or turn 3 or whatever it is? Are you going to start of get that paralysis? That kind of decision paralysis that affects quite a lot of people. And again, a lot of that's kind of just testing things and getting used to it and just being like, well, it doesn't matter. I don't need to spend 3 minutes considering the best exact position and use of a Backmono Raider. He just needs to be in the zone or be engaging model A, and if I've done that, then so be it. That's as far as we need to go with that. You'll have some critical models where you don't want to mess up their positioning, and you can spend a wee bit more time in them. But I think ultimately it is doable, but it'll just take practice.
It's most good tournament lists, they seem to be, you seem to have a kind of a playbook. You know, you've either got a kind of a machine or a set of synergies going that you kind of know positionally where things need to be relative to each other, if there are kind of auras or whatever that, or kind of, you know, setups that's needed, and you kind of play out from there. And I guess that seems to be part of the trick anyway, to get that consistency. I don't know if that's how you see it, because you're obviously a very consistent player. Is that part of it, or do you think it's just kind of you still got to be quite nimble in your thinking mid game and everything? Because I mean Bushido to me is something you normally have a plan for turn 1 and 2,
and then it's just oh hell goes. you do have to be nimble at stages, because there will be times where we'll be like, oh, I have not encountered X before, or I've never seen Y used like that, oh no, or even the old, oh, is that how that works, damn. So that can be problematic. That's where having a machine is quite useful, or even having a generalized plan. So if we think about the two tournament lists, the last two masters lists, the Minamoto list was, as I described it previously, it was a big, it was an onrushing shotgun So it had a lot of ranged elements in it, and it was a bit of a death ball, and ideally it pushed up together. And if you can break it up and force it to go in different directions, that slowed down its effectiveness a fair bit. But it would just rain shot against most opponents. Some, like ninjas, like shut that down a fair bit. But against a lot of people, even getting pinged for one or two damage at a time, if you're being shot by four different models, it can be quite exasperating, and you're like, oh, that model's going to go down in the next shot, or that model has a real chance of going down in the next shot. I need to react quickly, or I need to pull out of range. I need to move into combat, and obviously that's where the minimum of samurais want to be. But that kind of that juggernaut was what made that effective. So if you can break up that's you're onto a winner. But if you can't break that up and they continue to operate under their machine kind of ethics, if they're allowed to follow through on their battle plan, you're probably going to lose. And the same way Hagani's machine, it puts that thinking back on the opponent because it had so many pass tokens. I know exactly what Hagani's going to do at the end of the turn. The opponent then has to say, right, okay, well, right, positionally, where should I be? What's the best way to stop this? Is there anything I can do? Do I have access to events? Can I better utilize the terrain? Can I put my more defensive models in a position to protect my weaker ones? But they have to consider that all quickly, and they have to do it. And a lot of maybe that only becomes obvious how much thinking they're going to have to do, and they're going to have to do it off the back foot because they haven't seen it before. They haven't seen like, oh, that many pass tokens, and oh, how do I react to this? I can see what's coming, but how do I stop it? Because we're already halfway through a turn. And that can be obviously quite stressful and difficult. And that's where like being nimble or seeing that beforehand, before you're halfway through a turn, seeing what's coming, that's can make the difference between like a top end player.
So would you say it's fair to say that a lot of things that machine, because obviously there's no bones about it. There's a lot of, there's still, you know, there can be quite a lot of negative talk on the chats and stuff about the fact that things like the Hagane train or whatever is broken. You know, Mutaz is quite highlighted, you know, the whole Karu and lots of channel leech makes him an absolute monster to deal with. Do you think that these are lists that generally actually it's just very powerful because it's not been seen as much, or is it even with, you know, plenty of games, you still can't deal with that?
It's both. There will be some factions, again, because there's such a breadth of factions and there's such a breadth of models in each of those. Some factions will be able to turn around and look at the Hagani list and go, I cast Darkness, right? Okay, I use Breath of Uri. Okay, well, your main shtick is now turned off for the first two turns. What can I do in these turns? Well, that can't be utilized. Or like something like, there's a few things, the Darkness, Blizzard, the Blow the Man Down, is that the one? There's a few elements that you can shut things down. You might use something like Hypnotic Gaze, but you have to know what's in your arsenal, and you'd have to know what's in the list. But there are also elements of, is Hagani perhaps very good for her cost? Could you argue like her and Hero should have their rice swapped around? I mean, I would think so, but again, this is all personal preference, and we could look at, and things will change going forward, and things won't always be the same, but you will always have something that's going to be, you know, the strongest.
I think it is a big meta change, isn't it, really? For a small game like Bushido, it has been a massive meta, because we're not talking about models here that are relatively new, you know, it's hot new stuff that's coming in and absolutely taking the game by storm. These are all models, like your lists have all been models that have been in the games since day dot, really, not strange stuff. It's just maybe it's different people's, it's definitely sort of like different people's ways of thinking about, or if I do this, this and this, she can then actually do X, Y and Z, you know. So yeah, maybe it is people's exposure to it, because, you know, I'll be honest, sometimes I do get a bit bogged down in, you know, rightly or wrongly, I know I can't say whether, you know, it was a clever thing to put the Errata FAQ up there, and this may not be opinion, make me a popular, you know, person, but, you know, for me, sometimes I look at it, I think, is that doing more harm than it is doing good? Because people are just highlighting so much stuff. Is it going to be such a negative drawback if Jason turns around and says, oh, we're not doing that? Or, you know, because nobody knows what the plan is, you know, because generally on the whole, I personally feel the game is generally quite balanced. There is one or two models that are very, very good, but still manageable. You've just got to play into them and practice and things like that. So, yeah, I very loosely use words like broken and stuff like that, which I know get thrown around, or very MPE and stuff. I mean, against our game, it did start to feel a bit negative towards the end, but that was just because all my chaff was dying very quickly and not doing what I'd sort of been trying to do with it. So,
It's interesting, evolution of the meta. And I think you kind of need a few models to stand out and push things along, keep things interesting. And I think what's interesting about the prefecture list is you may actually not know that you've kind of you've almost lost before you realized it, if you're, to your point, if you're not an experienced player, because I mean, if anyone runs against your list, you know they don't know what's coming.
That's kind of it, isn't it? Yeah, you're like, oh, ah, I can see. Yeah, that's a good game. So, going back to Jack's point, like, I think putting it up, what people think is good and what's not good. Yes. I mean, it's all subjective at the end of the day, isn't it? Like, if your meta is like, oh no, we found good answers to model X, but, you know, the next community along said, oh, that one's really difficult to deal with, I can't think of any way of controlling that model. I mean, it can be like, it can highlight ways to maybe sort things that don't require necessarily, or maybe we've been approaching things incorrectly. I think it is a good idea, and it kind of, if something comes up enough, it's probably a good indicator. If you can say Model X has come up amongst all your playtesters, all your communities, then fair enough. There's probably a very good chance that that model is overtuned. And that is, that could be said for literally every game
and I think
has ever been created.
I don't think it's about, to be fair, I really liked the approach at the beginning, but I think sometimes I now feel that I wish it was just slightly turned off, because I think you get sometimes a lot of knee-jerk reactions to it. Oh, I've had a really negative game into Model X. Oh, he's the most busted model in the game. And then you go and have a game maybe 3 or 4 weeks later and it's actually okay because you know how to manage it. So maybe that's just my opinion of it.
Oh, that's definitely happened to me as well. You're like, oh, that one's unmanaged. It's so good. It's unbroken. Oh, I can't stand it. And then you're like, oh, no, I've worked out a way to, it's fine. And then the fact that it's being countered, it gets taken less, or it has to be utilized in a different way. And it's just things evolve, and it depends whether you want to kind of do something about it. Like, there are lists that are obviously much, like, I would not want to play like top end tournament lists in every game, because it won't be as enjoyable as maybe trying out new models or new play styles. And that's another thing, like, it's all well and good playing a very strong like a net deck list that might well win you games, but ultimately, like, you're not going to develop your understanding of other models or how they might interact, or even you've got a strong list, but with a bit of refinement, it could have been better. But you're not going to do that unless you play against other factions, play with other lists, with modifications to existing lists, or even just say, wait, well, how does this change if I take out Model X and put in this Ronin model with a control element that the list has never had previously? So unless you're exploring those elements of the game, which is obviously very broad, Yeah, again, you're probably.
I think that's the most that I've found over the last sort of 6 to 12 months of Bushido. Because I think before the first sort of Grandmasters event, I think I spent a good year just playing ninjas. I played with the same four models, game in, game out, fine tuning the cards, and I think it just got to the point where, oh, you know, and I wasn't seeing our stuff, but now I seem to be playing with complete random stuff just for the fun. Oh, actually, if you do this, like you said, you just get to see so much more. So maybe, you know, it sounds daft, you know, it might be safe to say that as a competitive player, it's quite good to play with curveball stuff just to get a good understanding of how other things work. So then actually, oh, okay, I've been doing this for my Jung, but actually so if I'm playing ninjas, as long as I can do this, that will stop that from happening. Or that'll be quite a negative, you know, for them to achieve or to deal with. So, yeah, I think it's good. I am actually quite excited to go back playing ninjas now. I've been sort of, I don't say messing around with other stuff, because I'll still play with my Minamoto because I've really enjoyed them. I'll still play with the Jung list. You know, I've bought the Jung list that I took to the Master last time. But part of me thinks that if I maybe put a little bit more effort in, I already think, you know, about our game and a completely different approach to what I would take with that. So, yeah, I generally think that it's been good, but now I am excited to go back to sort of what I'd say is my main faction, or the one that I've played with just more, because I've expanded my knowledge of other bits.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's it, isn't it? If you took like something like ninjas, like Kitsumi or something, against some factions, you're like, oh, this guy's unstoppable. He's just butchering whoever he targets and things like that. And oh, he's so difficult. And then you just run into some Ito model that has Sixth Sense and has Hypnotic Gaze, and you're like, oh, is Kitsumi worth 25 race if he can be like brutalized like that?
I've not played him yeah, into like Master Shi, but and I can imagine Master Shi just taking his two activations. Because let's be honest, a two key model is nowhere near, is probably not likely to beat Shi at all. It's just like, yeah, him shutting Katsumi or Rin or any of those top models off for a turn is just going to be so hard to deal with. But there'll be ways around it.
There will, but yeah, unless you played against that or if you've never come up against it, you're never going to have considered it, and you're not going to have thought of a way to kind of get around it, and that's kind of the long and the short of it, isn't it? There are options, and that might be the thing that decides between you choosing Dissension or Ito when you go to a tournament. Do you want more maneuverability? Do you want to go all in on maneuverability and let that, like some Alpha Strike models, your Bazembos and things like that, or are you going to go you've still got the speed element in Ito, but you've got more control as well. You've got mass poison and you've got like Hypnotic Gaze and the control elements that Dissension doesn't have. And what do you prefer playing with? I mean, that's the other thing we haven't really covered. Like, what is it you enjoy utilizing? Can you play anything and have a good time? Or are there certain things you're like, this makes me enjoy life? And obviously that's going to be different for different players.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, that is an important part of it, I feel as well. If you enjoy the models that you use, hence why I'm quite happy using Shiho Ashigaru, which, you know, not many people seem to like. But I think they've got a lot of tricks. It's like mobility that you were talking about earlier with your Ashigaru list as well. They've just got lots of that going on. So actually quite fun once you get into it. It's certainly given me some food for thought for some list builds anyway. That I've been playing around with. I'm not quite sure if they're all competitive, but it's good for the thought process.
That's it. I mean, I suppose the other thing is, do you think, or either of you think, it's easy to guess what you are going to come up against? Would you kind of like, oh, I expect to play against this if I come up against, or I expect there'll be this many of a given faction, or they're going to play with this kind of list? Because I think that's quite difficult, because I haven't got taken aback by like the breadth of some of the lists. So I'm like, oh, that's an interesting idea.
It's like you said, you surprised that I think the last event I went to, one, it was quite hard because there was a smaller number of players, but I was purely expecting to go into lots of Bakumono, lots of Kinshi. So I sort of tailored my list to sort of deal with those. Even though it was quite a broad list, my list was mm-hmm. quite broad, you know, it was like 8 or 9 models, so it could deal with probably most things. But it was like, okay, I'm going to focus on this because I'm worried that I'm going to see that. And then they don't turn up. and things like that, you know, putting finesse on models, you're like, oh, I've played 3 games and not a single model's had brutal. It's I think that's the very interesting thing about the metas at the moment, is it is still quite broad, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of factions out there, and with the themes and the sub factions, there's just such a massive range. I guess that's what we were saying earlier. It's almost you can try to theorize some of it because you can never play enough, you know, to cover all the bases. But it's probably increasingly difficult to sort of cover all your bases. And people do seem to have these kind of like little metas going on, and they bring them to the tournaments, and then you're kind of like exposed to something that you probably haven't seen before. And so that's pretty cool. I've quite enjoyed just seeing what other people come up with, the weird and the wonderful, and sort of how it makes sense to, you know, to them to play it, and how it's being built in their competitive way, because it just shows us sort of the wide diversity and range of list building that goes on in Bushido. I don't think we've quite got to the point where there's like, you know, an archetype for many lists out there. Probably a few lists maybe a bit more narrow because of mm-hmm. the model selection. So some of the thematic war bands are sort of, you know, they're a bit more restricted in what they can do. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we've sort of seen the sort of the rise of like, this is how you play, you know, this kind of faction or anything like that. Far from it. If anything, it seems to be every time you go to a tournament, someone's reinvented their list around it. And I mean, what you were saying about net listing as well, I've only seen a few people sort of seemingly have, you know, lists that I've done well before, and but I haven't really seen anyone sort of being able to just pull it off. So and I can imagine why, because Bushido's is very hard to do that with, just because it matters so much what you do on the table. So well, not accusing anyone of netlisting, but it is hard to replicate the success other people might have with similar lists, and do it justice. So it's just one of those games where it matters a lot what you do on the pitch, not all on the board, not just kind of how you build the list out. And I guess in a way that's probably what keeps us coming back to the game, because certainly for me it is anyway. I certainly prefer things that way, although I quite like making lists and it's quite a fun part of it. Mm-hmm. I like things decided on the table on the day.
That's fair. It's one of the things. There's certain elements you'll always be, oh, that's a beneficial thing to have. Like something like if you can get lots of Sixth Sense into a list, that's, you could generally say that's going to be beneficial in a number of matchups.
Yeah.
But against some, it won't have a huge. It could be defining in some matchups. And against others, against ninjas or Bakumono, having a lot of Sixth Sense can be a deciding factor whether you win or lose. But equally, if you've invested in a lot into getting Sixth Sense and you play into Minamoto, you'd be like, yeah. but equally, a lot of factions like Ryu, for instance, don't have access to any Sixth Sense that I can think of off the top of my head.
Ryu just mitigates camouflage, doesn't it, basically?
It can do. But use Sixth Sense to get up, run up the board under like Breath of Yurai or under Darkness and stuff like that can be like a game changing thing. And it's going back to knowing your faction and knowing your opponent. And how you're gonna build that list. If you expect that in a tournament you're going to play four games, there's a good chance you'll probably run into a faction that can utilize something like Darkness or Breath of Yuri, or something else that will slow you down, War Weary. And again, how are you going to adapt it? How's it going to change your game plan? If you're going to be right up the board and now you're not going to be right up the board, can you be cognitively nimble and come up with a way around that? Or are you stuffed at that point because you've locked yourself into a particular way of playing? I suppose it's one of the many elements you kind of got to consider. And a lot of the time you won't consider these things until you've been horsed by them. And then you're like, ah, right, okay, back to the drawing board. Back to list composition, back to reevaluating how to control a particular model or how to get the best out of the new model that's just come out, or the one that you've is the linchpin of your force. Yeah. And again, it's just learning through doing.
Absolutely, yeah. Learning through doing and learning through failure is a very quick way to get things sorted out in your mind, what works and what doesn't work. Yeah, fantastic.
That's cool. So finally, one thing I was just going to touch on, because it's more of getting your opinion on it and your sort of thoughts on it. Obviously, we're seeing a lot more of these sort of sub-factions, shall we say, the more themed style boxes, which, you know, is they're going to be popular because the models now are getting a lot more nice, you know, they're lovely models. Do you feel that there's a position where these may sort of overrun the competitive scene, or do you think that, you know, are you finding, or do you feel that you'll always naturally default back to the whole, you know, I think Order for Battle is always going to be that little bit stronger, because obviously there's big talk about Order for Battle. It's one of the most, probably one of the most talked about sort of themes that there are. Should it be there? Shouldn't it be there? Should it be that everybody gets Order for Battle on top of their benefits?
We get inherent flexibility into it. That's a very difficult question. I mean, I personally like the boxes because they're generally a pretty good jumping off point, or they're thematically very engaging. I love the Inari box. I'm looking forward to getting them models finished off and painted up. But it's a very difficult question to answer. I feel I've almost been kind of evasive for a lot of the questions because that is because of the breadth of the game and how things interact.
Do you personally think that a theme box could be as strong as an Order for Battle list?
Inherently, probably not. And the reason is something that's made up of 9 models is just, they're literally magnitude smaller than a faction that's made up of 40. So your number of combinations is, I think, generally, if you're just going to go with the weight of numbers, you're probably going to be able to sift through and find something better in that mass than you would be out of like 9 models. And I could be wrong there. And I will be interested to see how well Inari's Judgment plays on the table. But if you did encounter something that was proving problematic, you obviously have less areas to turn to at that stage. And obviously, but again, that will change because there'll be more event cards that come out in the future, and there'll be more models, even if they're again just limited releases, or there'll be things that people haven't thought about, or Rhone models that come out that they can then add into like what are generally smaller factions, and that can change things again. Whether they'll be utilizable in theme is another question, but just depends. Just how, you know, the future rolls out, I suppose. But yeah, I think Order for Battle, as I stated previously, its strength is being able to utilize everything, and without exception. And say, I mean, that would be another interesting one if you had a Masters in the future. that was locked into a particular faction team rather than a Ronin team? How would that change things? How would people approach that? I think that'd be
as in having no Ronin themes allowed, just faction themes.
Correct. Yeah. Faction themes. You're not allowed to go out of faction team. So, and again, that would, like everything else, some factions might find that easier than others. Some factions have got particularly notably strong themes or things they can utilize well, or they can use their model range more effectively. In the same way that some factions can utilize strong cards like pacifism really well, and other factions less so. It's just another question.
It's definitely interesting to see what your thoughts, Nick, because from my point of view, you're probably the strongest player that I've played into. That's not to disrespect any of the other players that I've played into, but you, like I said at the beginning, your record speaks for itself, and obviously your way of thinking is going to be different to a different grandmaster's way of thinking. It's always interesting to just see what elite players think about and how they think things affect the game, or how it affects them and their play style. Because like I said, I've always naturally lent more towards competitive play. I think it's more because I enjoy tournaments and I just enjoy that socialization. And hopefully, if I know they've talked about the development of like a lore based scenario sort of action, that'd be quite cool. I really look forward to that as well, but I think tournaments are definitely a good thing for me, because I enjoy playing with other people, because it just means I get to see things. I would never have seen your Hagane list if I hadn't been at that event and things like that, so it's definitely one thing, and I do like to test myself against it. So
it's the best way to learn, I think. And I don't know about you, but I definitely felt I started kind of very much more lower mid table and then worked my way up, and I guess like anyone listens to this who's not that competitive, I wouldn't be put off with, like, I don't think it's like a super competitive scene on Bushido, but there are some people that are pretty good. That's the kind of way
we're going to head that way. I think if you look at where the player bases are coming from, we've got a load of guild builders coming in because their main competitive game has vanished. Got a lot of War Machine players coming in, So I think, as much as I think some people don't like it, I do think it's going to be a big way in which the game goes, but I'm hoping it doesn't define the game, because it's a great game. I love the competitive angle to it, and I think the rule set's kind of geared to a good competitive game.
There's definitely a time and a place for playing your hard tournament list, but I think you're well served by playing kind of mid-range list a lot of the time, because it allows you to see how models operate without going full try hard and making life miserable for each other as possible. I think just nice kind of mid-tier games are the way that I think a lot of people would kind of most enjoy the game. And then, you can bring out your big guns and go get really in the tank for your tournament plays, I think is probably a good way to approach it.
I agree. I think I seem to see people generally enjoying the mid kind of sort of power level list, and the sort of just exploring things, coming up with the weird and wonderful combinations that you can. That might be anything between, a shark list, which turned out to be quite competitive in the end, actually, or whatever, anything else you can kind of think of. I think Bushido's kind of got that on offer, but it would also allow us that kind of like very top level of competition as well, if you really kind of want to kind of push things that way. I think you can definitely kind of gauge your audience and play accordingly, and have a good game out of it. And certainly you should be able to enjoy most tournaments you go to, even if you're not looking to win kind of every game. I think kind of the value and the experience of learning and meeting the community is so great that from my perspective anyway, personally, I've really really enjoyed getting out there and kind of meeting a few people and playing more games than otherwise I would have been able to. So it's great to see that kind of like that momentum behind it now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. It's interesting because obviously, like, you've suggested that maybe I think about things differently. Is do you guys think about that in the same way that I've kind of described, or do you have a different approach when you're looking at lists or factions?
I think for me, I started with, well, I actually started with Wolves because they was new, so nobody had them in our meta when mm-hmm. when I started playing. So it was like, oh, I'll take them then. They looked really nice. Mm-hmm. I knew they were going to be hard to learn, but I don't mind that. You know, I started other games. You know, I started Guild Ball with Morticians, which generally is not a starter friendly faction. So it's, I like that challenge, and I was very quick into ninjas just because, again, it was something that nobody played locally. So I always try to play things that other people aren't. And my approach with ninjas obviously was slightly different because obviously they play probably, you know, I know it sounds daft that every faction has their own way of playing, but I think ninjas completely play differently just because of the lack of models that you have on the table. So you have to think a lot more. It relies heavily on their position and things like that. So, yeah, that was a big learning curve for me. And the whole net listing idea, I wouldn't say I net listed to a degree, but I think with ninjas, it's quite limited anyway. You normally take in Kit, Rin, and Katsumi, so it was then fine-tuning. But, yeah, as I sort of mentioned before, my idea and interpretation of lists now is massively different to when I first started, whether that's just because of my experience in terms of playing other things. You know, I know, like, Kinshi get a lot of, like, they're really busted and stuff like that, but I still play them as if anything else. You know, I played them twice in the last tournament, and I just played into them as if they were any other faction, and I didn't think about all the stuff that they could do, because if I can, like, I think you sort of said, you know, if you know what your stuff's doing really well, it doesn't really matter what the other person's doing, because you're both trying to do the same thing. You're both trying to score scenarios. You're not trying to necessarily kill each other. So it's, yeah, I don't know. I approach things differently, and my mindset on the game's different. Like I said, I've been really focused on two models. I want two distraction pieces. So in the Jung, it was the two sharks that are always going to be big distraction pieces that you've got to worry about whilst my other guys do things. Mm-hmm. And the same again, I took that approach into Minamoto. I had two distraction pieces, whether that was Karu and Nico, or Karu and Grey Pilgrim, or Grey Pilgrim and Nico. They're two models that you've actually got to worry about that aren't necessarily easy to deal with, whilst I have a load of cheap stuff that can go and achieve the scenarios and play the other bit. And touch wood so far, it's been working fairly okay in that respect. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's just interesting to know, like, how you said those elite players like approach things, because it's just a different way of thought, and that's how I like to learn and play. You know, I like to see how different people play different things, and then I try and take the best bits from each person. So your Hagane showed me the importance of having, like, she was a big missile and a big problem to deal with. That actually, if I'm dealing with that, the other people are doing other things. So maybe, yeah, I've tailored my way of thinking. You know, I've taken that from yourself and that sort of aspect of having that distraction whilst other people do other things. So yeah, I think it's just really interesting to talk to. You know, I'm quite lucky as well. We've got Ben locally, and he's obviously a big ninja player, so he was always good to talk about ninjas. Like, oh, so what do you think of this? And what do you think of that card? And, you know, again, it's really interesting, and I think. I think it's good to talk about the competitive side of Bushido, because I think in some metas there aren't necessarily those competitive players as such. They, you know, some people just like to play for lore and the fluff, and that's all good.
That's fair enough. Yeah.
So yeah, I think hearing it and talking about it with other people is good to broaden your horizon in terms of, well, if I'm going to, you know, if I know that that's the sort of thing that they're going to play, then I won't find it as negative when it happens, maybe.
Mm-hmm. You might have a counter that makes it less oppressive in the first place.
Yeah, I guess how I think about it, and I think because I've probably got a slightly conflicting ways of approaching the game, because I quite like the modeling side of the game and just playing with like a nicely painted force, and so sometimes it's just the models can sway me. At the same time, I'm probably quite more competitive than I like to admit, and so, but I don't like to go for the whatever's obvious. I'll probably avoid that, and I'd like to go for something else, and that's maybe to my detriment. But then maybe as a challenge, if I took some of the kind of the more widely known powerful stuff, it would be interesting to see it. Could I really pilot it? Because I just haven't really ever used that kind of stuff. So like for my Silver Moon, I never used the gorillas. They're, you know, I played against them a bunch of times, but I've yet to properly use my own, and then things like that. I just, you know, I'd rather go another way. So I guess in a way I like to do something a bit different and a bit hopefully off meta, to sort of, in my mind, that potentially is the way to shake things up and to kind of see, well, you know, they weren't expecting that kind of thing, and see if I can pull it off. And I think I've had mixed success with that approach. So it's a bit of a mixed bag, and some of those things contradict each other, and so I don't have that kind of clarity of thought that sometimes I would say. but it's a fun process nevertheless. So normally when I approach kind of a big tournament, it'll be a combination of kind of doing something a bit different, painting a bunch of models together, and playing a few games to refine a list. So there's sort of a bit of an organic process to it all. I would love to be able to win a Grand Master. So there is a bit of me that thinks, you know, it's something that if you obviously want to go for it, you know, it's there for, you know, everyone's got a fair chance of getting it. So I think, the prize, I think, is what's pretty amazing in my mind. It's probably, I think Jason described it as one of the best prizes you can get in gaming. And
absolutely.
Yeah, and you're fortunate enough to have that twice. So obviously the kudos goes with winning as well, but being able to input your some factions you obviously really like, and design your own model is super cool in my mind. So that I've got that at the back of my mind of kind of like that. I think that gets my more competitive juices kind of going.
Absolutely.
Oh, that would be quite nice.
I mean, yeah, 100%. I mean, who doesn't want to design their own model or to have that like ability to input something of their own into the game?
No, that's to say thanks a lot, Al, for taking the time to come on and talk to us. That's been really interesting, just to hear kind of your thought process, kind of how you think about things, and some of your some thoughts on the meta and such. And it'll be very interesting going forward if this speculated FAQ and some new cycle cars and things and as new things are released, how that one. Kind of
it'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting.
So yeah, and I really appreciate you coming on and having this chat with us.
We'll close it there then. Thanks for listening, and thanks again for Al joining us today. It's been great to hear from you and talk Bushido. Thanks Jack as well for joining, and hope to speak again soon. Thanks everyone. Bye.
Bye.